seek him here, they seek him there. Those Frenches seek him everywhere. Is he in heaven? Is he in hell? That damned elusive Pimpernel.
Presenting Marius Goring, star of the motion picture Red Shoes, as Baron Zorch's immortal character, the Scarlet Pimpernel. Scarlet Pimpernel, starring Marius Goring as Sir Percy Blakeney.
Fighting the war with France was not the sole preoccupation of politicians and military leaders, nor was the battlefield always the most strenuous theater in which it was pursued. There was another kind of war in which the League played a prominent part, the war of espionage and counter-espionage. Largely it was fought in the darker places of Europe, in the holes and corners of the capitals, and particularly in London.
Any news from Hardy?
Yes, Danny. At this moment, he is down in Seven Dials, watching a certain antique shop, Simon's Arts and Antiques, no?
Isn't there an old fox called Simon Forrest?
Yeah, the same. Tony, I'm convinced that this old man's shop is nothing but a distribution center for one of the biggest spy rings operating in the country. Forrest has the most motley clientele of any shopkeeper I've ever known. Ranging from ordinary dealers to ragamuffins and pickpockets.
He's probably a receiver.
There are also Frenchmen, including certain members of the aristocracy. And there's no doubt that some of these earn their living by selling military and political information.
Spies among the French aristocracy? Oh, it sounds incredible.
There are many who can never forget their exalted positions, their wealth. And the more unscrupulous have turned their hands to whatever sordid enterprise offer the most lucrative rewards. Simon Forrest's shop is one of their trading goods.
Well, what do you propose to do? Organize a raid?
No. To destroy a fox lair, it's not sufficient to deal with the cubs. Our task is to find the brains, the organizer. And we won't do that by hammering on a door in Seven Dials.
Well,
there's a man named Henri de Fontaine. He calls at the shop regularly once a week at 7 o'clock on a Thursday evening. And he's living in Villiers Street, number 69. I want you to watch him, Tony. Note every call he makes. And if he leads you to an interesting contact, leave Burns to follow it up.
Where will you be if I want you?
Now, I've been invited to Sir John Castle's house party in Sussex. One or two gentlemen there whose acquaintance I'd like to make. Good hunting, Tony. I heard nothing from Tony for a week. I could well imagine that his task, unrelieved by the excitement which attended most of our missions, was long and intensely boring. Meanwhile, I was bored in a different way.
Oh, how refreshing it is to get out into the air. The ballroom is so stuffy and crowded.
Lord Charge's friend appears to have the same view. I do think he might introduce me.
Lady Cutting, Conrad. May I present Sir Percy Blakeney, the Countess of Ravens? It is a great pleasure.
And now, if you'll excuse me, I must talk to some of my other guests. I desert them shamefully. All your fault, Sir Percy. You won't make me dance.
The Countess danced to perfection. So beautiful was she that I must confess, for a little while, I forgot all thoughts of my mission. I was just happy in the company of a beautiful woman. But when the dance finished and we sat down, I received a rude shock.
So, it is a long time since we met.
Listen, my dear lady, we've never met before.
Ah, you are very clever at changing your appearance, Sir Percy. But one thing you cannot change, the touch of your hand on a lady's arm. I shall never forget the man who rescued me from France. His face was unlike yours. but the grip of his hand as he helped me to the coach, that I shall never forget or mistake. I wonder how many people here realize who you are.
I wonder.
They seek him here, they seek him there. Those Frenchies seek him everywhere. How does the rest of it go, Sir Percy?
Yes, it asks Chauvelin.
Oh, yes, poor Chauvelin. Tell me about your next adventure, Sir Percy. When do you go back to my beloved farm?
That is what Chauvelin would get his right arm to know.
Forgive me. That was very, how do you say, indiscreet, no?
No, but merely a reflection of your romantic mind, stimulated by the music and champagne.
And the light of the moon, she is so beautiful tonight. Look at her drifting through the clouds.
You have such beautiful thoughts, Countess. Almost too beautiful. You're a very clever woman. Don't try to be too clever, will you? The following morning, I watched Sir John Castle's guests proceeding to the hunt. I myself was too preoccupied with a different kind of sport. The sport of intrigue. Sir John Castle, my host, remained behind with me.
Rheumatism, Percy. I'm afraid my days in the hunting field are over. Hello, who's this?
Morning, Blakeney.
Morning, Tony. And let me introduce you, Mr. John Castle. Sir John and Mr. Tony, as you have.
Indeed, a pleasure. I'll join you later, gentlemen.
Well, what's the news?
De Fontaine was most obliging. Before leaving for his appointment with Simon Forrest, he made a call on the Countess of Laville. She left shortly afterwards in her coach.
Oh, where is Burns?
I told him to keep De Fontaine in sight.
This ring is well organized, Tony. The Countess supplies the information. A messenger like De Fontaine is provided, and he passes whatever he learns from the Countess to Simon Forrest. A day or two later, a customer calls, receives the latest information, which he smuggles over to France. In this way, the links in the chain have separated one from the other.
Well, there must be many other chains operating in the same way.
Well, too many for us to concentrate on at once. But something tells me that this one stems from the source.
The master. And we should watch the Countess of Laville.
Well, at this moment, she's about 12 feet above your head.
You mean she's...
When she left her house yesterday, she was on her way here. Sir John's house party proceeded favorable to its conclusion. That same evening, the men retired to their cars, whilst the women picked up the threads of aimless chatter and gossip. From the balcony adjoining the drawing room, I watched the Countess moving among the female guests like a beautiful cat. And I observed particularly as her attention idle, though it appeared, dwelt exclusively amongst those whose husbands were of a military or political calling.
This shouldn't be repeated, of course. My husband told me in great confidence.
Yes,
Lady Bilford. He leaves for France on Monday. A whole contingent of dragoons. Just think of it.
Oh, how you will miss him, dear.
Does one ever miss a husband?
She was very clever. She seldom asked questions. It wasn't necessary. Suddenly an idea occurred to me. I decided on a room.
So this party clashes. Not enough unattached women.
You've been exactly neglected, have you?
Oh, they hover. They all do, old boy. They hover.
I was wondering.
Well,
this might be asking you. I hardly know you. I was wondering whether you could manage a small loan.
How much do you want?
Well, if you can have trouble, £1,200.
Oh, it's a lot of money.
You see, I could repay it in a matter of weeks.
Could you, really?
You can't help me. I don't think we need prolonged discussion, Sir Percy. I'd be glad if you'd treat the matter in the strictest confidence.
Oh, gladly. Just a moment. There's no need to get in the hustle. Now, you just leave me your IOU, and I'll see you get the money by the end of the week.
Oh, I'm most grateful.
Not at all. Always glad to help a friend. Matter of fact, I'm very grateful to you.
Me?
You're a man of discernment, my dear fellow. You perceive something which usually escapes other people's attention.
Huh?
You recognize my true qualities. You realize that underneath the mask of a buffoon lies a shrewd and calculating brain.
I don't think you're a fool, exactly.
Oh. You'd never think, would you, that the cabinet had entrusted me with a mission, would you now?
Entrusted with a mission?
A mission of vital importance.
Huh?
If I told you, you'd never believe that.
I can keep a secret if you wish to confide in me.
You know, there's a wonderful thing about a gathering of this sort that everybody confides in everybody else. Everybody has a secret. And my secret is the most important of the lot.
Tell me.
17th of July. I'm leaving for France with dispatches for General Conway. Military dispatches. What do you think about that, eh?
It's Most interesting.
I thought you would be. The simplicity of my plan ensured its success. Each step I took was calculated with the ultimate design of disclosing more of the organization and the brains behind it. Moreover, the trap I prepared was braced by the conviction of truth. I was to receive military dispatches for General Conway, and I had every intention of starting my journey to him on July the 17th. The following day, the house party broke up, and I returned to London.
What are your plans, Bregner?
If Cloudy is part of the information I gave him to the Countess, Simon Forrest will get a visitor in the course of the next 24 hours, and I intend to be there.
A courier has just brought this letter, sir.
Thank you. Thank you. But... listen to this.
How did it?
Dear Sir Percy, I am deeply and eternally grateful for the generous loan which has relieved the heavy burden of debts incurred in the last 3 years of a wasted life, but in return, I have done you the gravest mischief. As soon as you receive this letter, I beg of you to come at once to my apartment, number 39 Buckingham Terrace. I wait anxiously for your reply. Yours, etc., Clargy. Well, what do you make of that?
Quite clearly a trap.
I don't think so. That letter screams of conscience. Oh, it's nice to know he has one. Sounds as though he's willing to talk. The light in the hall. Try to knock it again. He made it round at the back.
Blakeney, the door's open.
Well, let's go in.
Blakeney, over here. It's Clive's. They're a knife
through the heart. Somebody knew what he had to tell us, Tony. Whoever that was, murdered him.
Returns as the Scarlet Pimpernel. Proved what I had suspected. He was one of many mere pawns in the vast game of espionage. The man who used that dagger was probably a hired assassin. The real murderer is our Mr. X.
Now, do you think we'll get any nearer to him through Simon Forrest?
Simon Forrest won't bring us to a conclusion, no. But I do believe he represents one step nearer the conclusion. By tomorrow night, I think I shall know the identity of the man we want. Well, I'll leave you here. I'm going down to Seven Dials.
Who is there?
Messenger. From a friend.
At this time of night, come back in the morning.
Yeah, back up. Come on, back up.
If you don't go away, I'll call the watch.
You do that, my friend. There'll be trouble for both of us. I'm not going away till you admit me.
Wait,
I would like to come body in the body. What is it you want?
I'm not going to talk about that on your doorstep.
Oh, well, come in then. No.
Now, it is your fault.
Yes, indeed. You stop. You're dangling.
Don't shout. Don't smell.
Oh, yes.
Over here. Now, you keep quiet. Listen. When I tell you, you'll be unharmed. Not a one sound, and I'll ring your neck.
Who are you?
Never mind who I am. Just listen to what I have to tell you.
But I'm an old man, and I'm here.
It's a pity you didn't think of that before you decided to turn traitor to your country.
No.
I know who comes here. I know the kind of information you've been passing to the enemy. There are certain other things I do not know, and that's where you're going to help me. As I expected, Boris was merely a distributor of the secrets in particular. I questioned him remorselessly, long after the small hours of morning heralded the first great tinge of dawn. By the time the shop was due to open, I had a complete list of all the agents who called with information and the code numbers of those who came to collect it. But that was all. You have the shop and carry on your business in the usual way.
Are you going?
I won't be far away. If you try to escape, you'll be brought back immediately. Three of my friends are outside at this moment, and believe me, they're watching you like hawks.
You know, Blakeney, this is about the craziest idea the warehouse has ever had. Still, orders are orders. The dispatches will be delivered to your house first thing in the morning.
Yes, General.
If you get through to General Conway, it will be one of the greatest services you've ever rendered. And maybe the only one, eh, Blakeney?
I'm quite confident, sir. I shall get through.
Don't you be too confident. The obstacles don't necessarily lie waiting for you in France.
Oh, don't they?
Well, they're here in London.
Oh.
If the French get wind of your savings, they'll be sure that Citizen Chauvelin will have a reception committee waiting for
you. Now, there's a man I'd really like to meet. Oh, terrible.
Well, in these circumstances, perhaps you'd even enjoy meeting you, eh, Frank? Yes, well, now let's go to the club. Into the club. You can lunch with me,
actually. Yeah, thank you. Oh, hello, a friend of mine. Oh, will you excuse me for a moment,
sir? Yes, well, of course, my dear.
Madame, a word with you. How do you suppose I can get in touch with that luxury little countess? What's her name?
The Countess of Revere?
Let's see.
Between friends,
of course.
Now, if I give you her address, you'll promise not to steal her from me.
Oh, faithfully. At least only temporarily. Then I shall tell her to you. Intact.
Yes, of course.
Provided, of course, she leaves me intact. Not my boy old Claudius, for instance.
Heavens, man, you don't speak of...
You heard about him.
Yes, very sad indeed. Suicide, of course.
Every indifferent to death.
Oh, he was in a bad state. Debts were enormous. He owed me no less than £1,500, you know. Yeah. Signatures all over the place.
Trifles.
You can't suppose that there's any connection between Claudius' death and the Countess Rabine.
I suspect a slight case of l'amour, my dear John. L'amour. Claudius told me he was desperately in love with
her. Oh, poor fellow. And you want her address. Testing Providence, what?
You know, on the day Claudius died, he sent me a little note.
Oh?
Yes, would you like to read it?
Yes, of course.
Good heavens.
Whatever did he mean by a grave mischief?
I can't know at all.
What makes you think our mutual friend can throw light on the mystery?
I believe the dear Countess was with him half an hour before his death. That'll be about the time you wrote the note, you know. I called on the Countess the same afternoon. She was not at home. That is to say, she was not at home to me. I was not surprised. That night, I returned to the shop in Seven Dials. It was Thursday, the 16th of July. I spent the best part of 40 minutes preparing myself to receive Mr. Simon Forrest's very special client. It was not easy to effect a total disguise, but I relied on the chance of our first meeting. Forrest himself had no idea whom he was to expect. I think someone's arriving now. Stay in the back parlor. Not a sound.
You are Simon Forrest?
Yes, Belated. At your service, Belated.
I am looking for a small Louis XV table.
Newly gilded, Milady?
Newly gilded.
And recently upholstered?
In flowered chintz. You were expecting me?
Yes, Milady.
You are to keep this sealed envelope. You are to give it to the person who will ask for a small crystal chandelier.
you will reply as follows.
It was an Englishman who called. A huge, murderous-looking ruffian with a deep scar on his cheek. I realized at once that if this man was not a murderer already, he had every intention of repairing the omission upon his first meeting with Sir Percy Blakeney. His name was Rufus Crouch. He had obviously been carefully selected for the job. No mean adversary to reckon with. A man of considerable intelligence. I gave him the sealed envelope left with me by the Countess of Ravir.
July the 17th. Huh. An interesting date. Yeah, man.
Lovely date, Mr. Croucher.
The following morning, I took the stage for Dover, keeping strictly to the letter of my arrangements with the General, with one slight exception.
We leave in 1 minute, my lord.
Everything all right, Danny?
Yes. Harding will meet you halfway, and Burns will be in Dover, well ahead of you.
Well, tell him to go to the Saracen Inn and hide the dispatches under a floorboard in his room. Now for the false ones. You got them ready?
Yes, sir. Yeah. Good luck, Pickney.
See you when I get back. All being well in a month's time.
One other guest to share the table with you. A question of accommodation, I see, my lord. The inn is very crowded.
Let me.
You look surprised, Countess.
Well, you are the last person in the world I expected to see.
Surprise is neutral.
Did your coach doesn't usually stop here? A new mission, Mr. Countess?
Minor importance, hardly worth mentioning. And you?
I? Oh, I'm meeting some friends. Very boring, I'm afraid.
Ah, well, you can't expect excitement all the time.
An hour after nightfall, we approached a lonely stretch of road some 20 miles from Dover. I knew the presence of the blow would be struck, and my thoughts dwelt with some misgiving on the scar image of Mr. Rufus Crouch. The success of my ultimate plan depended upon being deprived of the fake dispatches. But more important to me, on my ability to escape with my life after Mr. Crouch's primary object had been achieved. I consoled myself with the fact that Harding was now sitting in the driver's seat.
Oh! Hey, what's that? Whoa! What all is about? Keep your seat, driver, and your tail on arms. Look, there are no valuables inside the coach, and save a few passengers. Stand in the coach, all of you. I'll check you, Blakeney. I want you out on the road. I've got six armed men with me. One false move and you're dead duck.
Oh, I say, just tell me what you want and let me proceed on my journey.
Hey, good, let me have that.
There's a state documents. No, you know the penalty.
Death for the man who carries them. They won't be with me long. Come on, baby.
Falling back. Look, put me down a quarter of a mile from the inn, will you? When you find the driver, get along there and meet him.
I wonder who'll be there this time.
If my guess is correct, Crouch has been instructed to hand the dispatches to the county. Then why should we be there today? And by now, that company is someone I've been waiting to meet for a long time. We watched from a clump of bushes finishing the courtyard. First we saw Crouch in his hard, cutthroat center. And then a few minutes later, a coach rolled up to the front door. Seventeen of our men are surrounding the inn. Now, Collins, we'll take care of Cash's men. Harding,
yeah?
You take over the back and signal me when you're ready.
Right.
I'm glad to see you in such distinguished company. Stay over there, Crouch.
Oh, this is an outrage. I shall demand an inquiry.
Don't raise your voice so much, Countess. There's somebody else in the room. I want him to hear me.
Oh.
The curtain hides you, Sir John, but it won't stop a bullet. I advise you to come out. He looks scared, Harding.
But John Castle?
Listen,
for pity's sake,
I... Pity, Sir John? What pity did you feel for Clarges?
I can explain.
Explain. Those wonderful parties in which promising young officers lost their money and possessions of cards. What pity did you feel when you handed them so that in desperation they sold you their country's secrets? And I wonder how much pity the Countess felt when it became necessary for one of them to die.
You may think you are very clever, Sir Percy, in preventing me from reaching France and telling Chauvelin of your identity. There you have succeeded. But by now, those dispatches are on their way to France, and there is nothing that you can do to stop them.
In a moment, Marius Goring returns as the Scarlet Pimpernel. Now, Marius Goring as the Scarlet Pimpernel.
It was unfortunate that the dispatches which the Countess had so cleverly dispatched to France were the false ones. And a month later, when I returned from my successful mission to General Conway in France, many of the League were at my house waiting to welcome me. It was one of those rare occasions in which I had to relate an adventure instead of sharing it.
Well, what happened to Crouch, Blackbeard?
Well, when I arrived in France, he was busy trying to explain to Chauvelin why an army of 10,000 Frenchmen waited 3 days off Dieppe for a British invasion.
And when you left?
And when I left, he was trying to explain why the invasion came from the land and therefore pushed the French army into the sea.
Adventures of the Scarlet Pimpernel, starring Marius Goring, is written by Joel Murcutt, with music composed and conducted by Sidney Gorch. Produced by Harry Allen Carr.